Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:22 that specific summer time, at least until Sunday. And today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. And this week, I thought, considering that we're going to have the U.S. election on Tuesday, that it might be a good time to look at what the betting odds are. This website is oddschecker.com. In case you're not familiar with how to read off these bets right now, Hillary Clinton, if you were to bet £10 and she wins, you would get your £10 back plus three additional pounds. On the other hand, if you were to bet £10, or if you were willing to bet £4 on Donald Trump, you would get back 11. So the odds heavily favor Hillary Clinton. But of course, over the last year, what have we been presented with? We've been presented with the impossible actually occurring. So the odds were heavily in favor of the anti-Brexit vote carrying the day at the referendum in the UK, and yet that did not occur. Just 2 days ago, the Chicago Cubs won the World Series for the first time in 108 years. So the impossible really can occur. And it is with that that I think people have been worried about what exactly is likely to occur, and that is why we've seen a pullback in stock markets. So I'm going to pull those charts up in a moment, but what is perhaps more important beyond the election, because obviously the result of the election we will know more likely than not on Wednesday, whether Clinton or Trump wins. Perhaps a more important question is which party will control the Senate, because if Clinton wins and the Republicans control the Senate and the lower house, then she's going to find it very difficult to get any of her policy objectives achieved. On the other hand, if Trump wins and the Democrats control the Senate, he's going to have an equally difficult time. So there is going to be a certain amount of horse trading, and what we can also anticipate is that the one policy that would appear to have cross-party support is fiscal stimulus. So rather than to think about what the size of the stimulus, or whether, sorry, whether there is going to be a stimulus, but rather what the size of it is likely to be. Today, what we saw was that wage growth broke out, and that is, I think, really quite important. That And not least because we already have evidence that the Fed raised rates a year ago because wages were breaking out. That was wages broke out on the update in September, and the Fed raised rates a couple of months later. Well, we've had some revisions, so I have to re-download the prices for this index every time it updates because of the revisions. But what we are now seeing is that last month's figure was revised upwards, and then this month's figure was a new high. So it is actually breaking out both on the new data and on the revised data. That suggests that the not only is unemployment quite low, but also that people are beginning to have a bit more confidence that they are asking for more money, that they are quitting their jobs because they think that they can do better elsewhere. And those are indications that the labor force is in rude health. And perhaps more important than all of that is that the by the role that that has in inflation terms is that it simply can't be hedonic out of the data. That when people are moving jobs and asking for more money, then that is directly inflationary, just very, very simply. So then the Fed will be encouraged to raise rates. The only thing that could possibly derail them from doing so would be a very unruly outcome to the election on Tuesday, and then it would likely only be a delay. So we can pretty much anticipate that we are going to have a breakout overall. Now, when we look at the banking index, it hasn't pulled back by nearly the same extent as the wider markets have, but I think perhaps much more important than that is that it is now exhibiting relative strength. And I do think that it is really worth looking at this on a long-term chart. It gives us an idea of really that we're not looking at, we haven't looked on the banking sector for leadership for really quite some time, that it has been an enormously lengthy convalescence overall. And it isn't over either. There is no evidence that that banks are breaking out of this very lengthy base formation on a relative basis, so overall. But in the short term, they are moving on to new high ground. And of course, that is part of the reason. Part of the reason for that is because we have this evidence of increasing interest rates. And the case for higher interest rates is really quite bullish for the banks because they have been toiling under a low interest rate environment overall. And higher interest rates would give them a greater margin on their businesses. And particularly for the US banks, they're not really over-leveraged. Interesting news in here this week that for the first time in something like 40 years that the banking sector is not the largest provider of mortgages, that that role is now being fulfilled by private lenders who are unencumbered by the legacy of the credit crisis and the default crisis overall. But neither do they have the same backing of a deposit base that the banks would have. So there is certainly some risk in those private lenders, but perhaps more particularly, that risk is not centered on the banking sector any longer, and therefore the banks may be in a better position overall because they have not been lending into what has been really quite profound asset price inflation in the real estate market over the last number of years. I think that, and not least, when we think about what kind of news flow has been coming out of the banking sector, with thousands of Wells Fargo employees having to be fired because for creating fake credit card accounts, that is just another deplorable example of governance within the sector. And obviously, then the investors are just writing the sector off entirely. But what we are seeing is evidence that it is beginning to outperform. Now, when we think about that, why is it that banks would be outperforming? Well, obviously, it's because they're making more money, their margins are improving. But banks are liquidity providers. And while the Fed is talking about raising rates, and while we do have at least some evidence that bond yields have begun to pick up, well, then we also have to potentially think that, or we have to realize that it was the Fed that was fulfilling the role of liquidity provider over the last 5 or 6 years, and there is the potential now that the banks might be able to pick up their end of the of that bargain once more and begin to start lending again. But of course, they can't lend until they can make margin. So, with higher interest rates, bank margins improve, and therefore, lending appetite for lending should improve as well. And we can see here that US Treasury bonds have staged an impressive pullback, and that's a big rally in yields, going from the all-time low in July. Which was at 1.31%, and they're currently trading at 1.785. So it has already been an impressive move, and we have seen some softening in the yield over the last week because of this. If we've had hedge shorting of stock markets, then we have had hedge buying of bonds. But the reality is that the longer the duration is on a bond, the greater the interest rate risk there is. And we have had a substantial momentum move where you can see just on this chart that yields halved between 2014 and July of this year. And that was an environment where interest rates didn't move at all. we didn't really have an interest rate hike, and it was only a quarter of a point a year ago. And since then, the yield compressed really quite a lot. So, what effect then can interest rate hikes begin to have on government bond yields? And so far, nobody's really talking about convexity, which is, how much of an effect interest rates can have on the linkage between the price and yield. And of course, convexity increases with interest rates. Now, when we look at the Merrill Lynch 10-year plus futures total return index, we're presented with one of the most consistent trends ever. It's been going up, and really, it was only this period in 2013 that represented the only time that it traded below the 200-day moving average for any significant period of time in, I think it started in 1983. So it has been going up for over 30 years. Now, it is now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. And I think that because it is a total return index, obviously the yield goes up when the price comes down, and therefore the total return will cushion this index overall. And that is what it has been able to do for 35 years. On the other hand, if convexity increases, and because of higher interest rates, then the one-to-one linkage between price and yield would break down, and that for every decline in price, the yield would rise less. And therefore, that is something that could really upset the consistency of this chart. So, and I really have not seen anybody talking about convexity. And in fairness, I only read about convexity when I was learning bond math when I started in Bloomberg, and that was in the year 2000. And it really wasn't particularly relevant then either. But we're in a very different environment now because interest rates are rising off of historic lows, and we have had really quite a lot of compression in bond proxies. So, and I think, and this was something I was looking at today, with regard to the residential healthcare, and what we've seen is for instruments that have got very high yields, then those prices, obviously those yields have compressed from what they would have been 5 or 6 years ago. But what we also now see is that because interest rates are deemed to be beginning to rise, then the price at which people are willing to pay for what would have been double B or maybe even treble B would have been really very high indeed. So price has to come down in order to sustain the yield, which would in order for it to remain attractive. That's what we've definitely seen in some of the healthcare shares, in some of the residential healthcare shares, and definitely in the mortgage REITs. And it was because mortgage REITs are incredibly interest rate sensitive, then they have been leading on the downside for over a year and a half already. Now, when we look at dividend aristocrats, when you mention the word dividend aristocrat, it is companies like McDonald's and Coca-Cola spring to mind. So, McDonald's has been falling for the 6 months already, and it is now trading below the trend mean. If we look at this on a lengthier time frame, then this has been a fairly substantial contraction already. But because this is a share that would really have done well because of yield compression, it's probably worth looking at the dividend yield. And then we can see that since 2009, every time that the yield on something like McDonald's has got up to 3.5%, then the share has rallied. And now we're seeing that we're getting that yield expansion again because people are worried about interest rates, and they want to get a more secure yield, but they want it to be a competitive yield. So what we're seeing is McDonald's selling down, but then the chances are that it will bounce again when the yield gets to 3.5%. And it isn't quite the same very logical linkage when you look at Coca-Cola, but these are reasonable expectations, because you look at Coca-Cola and then you get this magic 3.5% level again when you look at 2009. That's where the yield got down to, and 3.5% on a share that has been raising its dividend consistently for decades is rather attractive. So we have seen some yield expansion already. We have seen some of the prices coming down, and then you really do have to ask yourself, what is the risk on some of these? Because when you look at something that historically was trading at 8% and it's now trading at 4%, well, then we know that then a lot of yield compression has already occurred in something like that, and for it to get back to where it was historically, then prices could fall quite a bit. But when you look at something that is AAA rated, and it is already pretty close to some of the highest yields that it's ever had, well, then obviously the risk is considerably less, and potentially we're getting back into rather attractive levels overall for these kinds of shares. And another one, obviously Procter & Gamble is not quite in the same region, but again you can see that 3.5% is another area where you get this, and it would appear that 3.5% on the yield is something of a magic number for some of these shares. So I think that is something that we do definitely need to keep in mind from a medium to longer term perspective, that it is in shares that can raise their dividends, that have a record of being able to raise their dividends, that we will be able to see a hedge against any kind of interest rate hikes or rises in yields. Generally speaking, stocks are one of the best hedges against inflation. But of course, there is the other way of thinking about it, and it is that the kinds of shares that don't pay a dividend at all, well, perhaps those would be the shares that would outperform, because they are growth-oriented and their growth will compensate, because they will regain pricing power in an inflationary environment overall. So, and there is the risk that we are going to have greater inflation overall. And a chart I posted earlier this week was the Chinese PPI. And this was something that made headlines because it was breaking out to new 5-year highs. And what we've actually seen is that it's been rising all year. It's only just now broken out to new highs, and the last time it was trading at this level was in early 2012. But it has been going up all year. So if China can export deflation, and it has been exporting deflation for the last 4 or 5 years, then it is quite capable of exporting inflation, because the factories that I've been going to visit with my wife, and when you talk to people, and when the deal has already been negotiated, and you just talk about, go out for dinner and you talk about how's business and how things are going overall, they're unabashed in telling anybody that is willing to listen that they've seen margin compression over the last number of years, that wages have gone up and they haven't been able to raise prices. They've been saved by the commodity bust because that threw them a lifeline, but with commodities starting to recover and wages certainly haven't come down and they're still going up, that they have no choice but to raise their prices overall. Now, if exporters are raising their prices, then and China still represents the factory to the world, either those exporters become uncompetitive and they will have to move somewhere else, or everyone else, and it is quite likely to be and or we're going to see greater producer prices filtering through into consumables in the rest of the world. And with wages increasing, then those wage increases and wage demands are only likely to increase if basic commodities increase in price and consumables. And I think, I was surprised, when I wrote 2 or 3 weeks ago that neither of the political parties had really cottoned on to the fact that the prices in the Obamacare exchanges had jumped by 29% this year, and that's following, double-digit increases for each of the last few years. But of course, what it means is that because a lot of these plans, you have to have the plan, but then you have a very high deductible, so you also have to have $3,000 or $4,000 sitting around that you can spend on healthcare before you get any benefits at all. That this is also creating really quite a problem, because you are paying for healthcare, but you're not actually able to access that healthcare, and you then have to have some money lying around. Now, that's a fantastic recipe for wage inflation, because you continue to see people talking about a living wage, about the rising cost of healthcare, education, services overall, and now you also have the potential that the consumables that represent the consumer discretionary and indeed consumer staples sectors then could also start to rise. So that is a potentially important development overall. And when we think about inflation, it isn't really something that we've had to think about very much at all for really the last few years. Now, when we look at where we are in the stock market cycle overall, and I'm just going to pull up my own charts. Then we have the S&P 500 has pulled back this week, and I think a lot of people are asking this important question, and it is a very reasonable question considering where we are in the cycle. That we had a very, very impressive, consistent advance between 2012 and early 2015. We've been through a volatile range where we've had two really quite traumatic drawdowns. Now the market broke out in July and August. It has come back to test the upper side of that underlying range, and is it going to hold? Are we going to get another one of these very volatile periods of time, or are we going to rally from this 2100 area? And of course, we won't really know that. Obviously, an obvious catalyst, something that everyone is looking at, is the election result. And there is the capacity that we could have a well, Trump could win, and that would be unlikely to be greeted with applause by Wall Street and by investors generally because of the uncertainty that that would result in. And therefore, there is the possibility that we do go into another one of these volatile periods of time, and that the index would fail at 2100, and that we could go and then go back down and test the lower side of the underlying range. And we can see very clearly from this chart that the lower side of this range is much closer to 1800 than any other number. And that is the risk. Of course, when we talk about considering that the vast majority of the Republican Party aren't particularly enamored with Donald Trump either, there is the possibility that he might not be able to do very much of what it is what he wants to do. When we look at the Russell, that is, I guess, high beta overall, then it has pulled back over the last couple of weeks. It is now right in the region of the moving average. And if we've seen anything over the last few weeks in gold, it is that it isn't that we look at the moving average or as the trend mean and look for indices to find or encounter resistance. find support or encounter resistance in exactly the level of the moving average, but rather in the region of it, because it is simply a trend mean. It is something that we look for, that prices would either pause or rally from the area of it, because we often overshoot. That's exactly what we saw with the precious metal markets. And the Russell did firm today from the 1150 area, but of course, and this isn't the first time either that it has overextended on the downside relative to the MA before then finding support. But what happens on Tuesday is obviously going to be an important consideration overall, because if these markets do fail, then we could move into a cyclical bear market where best case scenario, the range that has been in evidence for, or at least that was completed in July, but previously had been in evidence for 18 months, could continue for another year. And it would be more difficult overall. Now, when we start to look at these things, we do have to consider that we are in an age we've been in an environment for nearly a decade of extraordinary monetary accommodation. And it is in the US where that is beginning to be unwound. But, you know, I think in Europe we're a long way from having it unwound. And this week, the majority of those European indices pulled back in a dynamic fashion from the upper side of their respective ranges. They are also reacting to some hedge shorting as a result of anxiety about what happens in the US, despite the fact that the US has had subpar growth for a decade. It is still far and away the largest of all of the capital markets, and what happens there has a leash effect on the rest of the world. And we won't have spoken about the Wall Street leash effect for quite some time. What we do now have, though, is a dollar leash effect, that when the dollar rallies, then the euro is going down, and that is generally positive overall for Europe. Europe is facing a very difficult environment. Growth is just about beginning to turn, but it is totally reliant on extraordinary monetary accommodation. The banks are, because they have not written off all of the debts that were accrued, and part of the reason for that, of course, is because those debts were written or were extended to individuals and to corporations and businesses in other countries. So writing them off would represent a bailout for foreign countries, and that is one of the internal problems that Europe continues to have, that it cannot decide whether it is an economic framework or it is indeed a country. And that isn't a question that's likely to be answered anytime soon either. So in the absence of an additional decline in the euro, then there is this is not a particularly bullish chart overall, that it has now encountered resistance. Follow through next week would really open up the door to this index going right down to test the 285 area. So it would extend the range that's been in evidence all year if we get follow through on the downside next week. And the Japanese index, or the Nikkei, has got pretty similar characteristics. It is now right in the region of this 17,000 level, and in fact it closed below it this week. Now, if we just look at the consistency of the chart, that it had trended in a reasonably consistent manner between late 2012 and the middle of last year. Then you had a massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend. That was a type 2 top characteristic. Then it encountered resistance in the region of the lower side of that overhead range. And then you get this right-hand extension phase, and then you break down again. So there's nothing there to say that we're not still trending down. If this area around 17,000 does not hold, then it increases the possibility that we could go down and test 18,000 or potentially even go down and test below 15,000 again. Now, that would, of course, that would embolden the bears. That would really begin to weigh on sentiment. And of course, it is all down to what happens with the dollar index. Obviously, the euro and the yen represent rather large weightings in it. And if we look at this index, it has been ranging for nearly 2 years. We get this really quite impressive advance in the summer, and that was a short-term overbought condition as it got back up towards that 100 level, and it is rapidly unwinding that short-term overbought condition. Now, we don't have any evidence just yet that the dollar has found support. And that being the case, then we don't yet see any evidence that the euro has encountered resistance. But we do know that both the dollar and the euro are coming back towards their respective trend means. But the problem is that a trend mean is much more useful in a trending environment than a ranging environment, and I don't think anybody would question that the dollar euro has been ranging for really quite some time. This is a very volatile environment overall, because the Europeans certainly don't want to see the euro trading higher than 115, but they are a little bit reticent to see it trading below 105 because of the loss of confidence that that would represent in the European project overall. Therefore, this market has been ranging. Now, if the US continues to raise interest rates, then the interest rate differential will widen. And generally speaking, that is dollar bullish. So, yes, we definitely have some uncertainty this week and probably next week as well. But where inflationary pressures are mounting most clearly is in the US. It would be a very, you would have to argue hard. That there is any evidence of inflation in Europe, or indeed in Japan. They continue to need a quantitative easing. They continue to need extraordinary monetary accommodation to even begin to overcome the environments that they have overall. And in fact, what they probably need is a greater commitment from their respective central banks to do more. What we have seen is that the Eurozone has, and the ECB in particular, has said that they are prepared to leave quantitative easing in the system for longer. But that may not be enough. They may have to do more. And eventually, the question of what to do with all of the bad debts is going to have to be addressed. Because in the absence of that, then Europe is going to end up in a financial sector malaise, very akin to what happened in Japan. I know that there was a lot of fears that the US would go the Japanese route, and that has not occurred, but it is looking increasingly likely that Europe will go the route that Japan took with the bursting of its bubble. And that was decades ago at this stage. Of course, if the Europeans can muster the confidence to engage in a fiscal response, in other words, to abandon the fiscal consolidation constraints that it has imposed on just about all of the Eurozone members, then that would be enormously beneficial to asset prices overall. If the US does indeed go ahead with a fiscal bump, that would increase the potential for other countries to follow suit. When we look at the euro and it is a range-bound environment overall, then until we see a breakout, we will not have evidence that that we've had a real change here. But perhaps in the very short term, what we should be looking at is the short-term progression of lower rally highs that has been in evidence since April, because prices are now coming right back towards that level. And we are back at a potential area of support for the dollar overall. Now, if we look at a couple of these other currencies, then the the Japanese yen has now pulled back, or the dollar has pulled back from the 105 area. It has been a loss of momentum in terms of this downtrend overall. It really has been just ranging between 100 and 105 since June. What it has done, though, is it's unwound the dollar's oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Now, this is still a reasonably consistent downtrend overall. The move up to 105 did break the progression of lower rally highs. But what we now need to see evidence of is that the dollar finds support above 100. If it can do that, then a break back above 105 and above the 200-day moving average would really help to suggest that we're going to see additional dollar strength overall. And there are logical reasons why that should be the case, but we're in a difficult environment over the next few weeks, and how this all plays out is going to have a, I think, a very important medium to long-term effect overall. Because we've had a big move in the dollar, we've had a very lengthy range overall, but if the dollar breaks on the upside, then US economic superiority and hegemony overall will be reasserted, and then that will start to put pressure on other countries, and not least those that have got substantial US dollar denominated debts of their own. Now, of course, what happens with the dollar is important for precious metals. The gold price has now bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average. It's been up now the last 3 weeks in a row, and this was the best of those 3 weeks. So we now have at least evidence of a short-term low. And the price is trading back above the 1300 level and testing the progression of lower rally highs that we've seen since July. It is going to need to break that progression of lower rally highs to really confirm that demand is back in dominance beyond the short term. And I think that there is some evidence for being reasonably confident that that is possible. Silver has also bounced from below $18, and it also has this progression of lower rally highs since July. So really, its sustained move above 20, we'll be able to sound the all clear and begin to think of this as reasserting on the upside. And it is an important period of time because we've had an impressive rally already this year, and that rally broke the medium-term downtrend. And now we're really just looking for it to continue to find support in the region of the trend mean. Precious metals have generally been more volatile overall. These kinds of swinging pullbacks are unfortunately not unusual. And if we look at the 5-year chart, we can see plenty of evidence of similar pullbacks. And in fact, the pullback that we've had is not particularly large relative to the kinds of declines that we've had previously. But if this is a demand-dominated environment, then the region of the trend mean will hold, and then it will rally to break the short-term progression of lower rally highs, and then it will reassert on the upside. And obviously, there are a lot of moving parts in just about every part of the global economy right now. And there is still the large outstanding question of what on earth the central banks are going to do with all the debt. And one thing that we know that the Fed has done is that it engaged in a duration lengthening program so that the average duration of the holdings is in excess of 5 years. It is looking increasingly likely that the ECB will also have to do something like that in order to remove their short-term funding liabilities. Of course, the risk that the banks have, the central banks have, is that when their bonds mature and they do want to roll them forward, then they're going to be rolling them forward into bonds that have a higher yield and lower prices. Then they have this maturity risk overall. Now, because of course these bonds have been lent from one, issued by one part of the government and bought by another, there is the possibility that they could simply buy all of an issue and cancel it. That could have a rather profound effect on markets overall. So we don't know exactly what it is they're going to do with them. And what if inflation does start to increase, then there is, of course, the possibility that they try to inflate their way out of trouble. And precious metals do best when people lose faith in fiat currency. And if they do go for the inflationary bias overall, well, then the likelihood is that the medium-term advance that we still have evidence of in precious metals will continue, and that relative to historically high prices for bonds, historically high prices for equities, that precious metals are not expensive. And you know, it's not just precious metals. When we look at, and I think perhaps we should look at copper, because copper is perhaps the industrial metal that has done least, and yet here we have it breaking on the upside. Copper has now broken a medium-term progression of lower rally highs, so it is beginning to play catch up. Aluminium was already breaking out this week, and again, aluminium was not the industrial metal that was leading on the upside. When we look at zinc, for example, it has already staged an impressive rally this year, and is now testing the upper side of a 6-year base. When we look at the resources overall, then we're not looking at something like nickel or tin to act as lead indicators. Generally speaking, that when we look at where we are in the market cycle, that interest rates are just beginning to rise again. Now, if we just forget for a moment that they're coming off of historically low levels and that they've been very low for a very long time, if we look at the characteristics of what's happening in this market, that we are getting very, very impressive rallies in the commodities overall. It isn't just the precious metals, it isn't just the industrial metals. We've seen a substantial rally even in coal shares. The cement shares have been doing very well as well. Steel shares are beginning to turn the corner. Now, when that generally happens, these types of companies and their cash flow is very closely tied to the health of the global economy overall. Now, if Chinese producer prices are increasing, generally speaking, that is consistent with the return to growth in the Chinese economy. And China has had is still going through a big transition, but there is the potential for growth to surprise on the upside. Europe has got major problems, but growth has at least stabilized, and the US has the potential for, if wages are increasing and unemployment is at very low levels, and that kind of inelasticity in the labor force is generally consistent with economic growth. And we're starting to see evidence that economic growth is helping to push these commodity prices higher. Because we've been through an enormously painful phase where a lot of the marginal supply was closed. Where a lot of the expenditure on bringing new supply online was cancelled, and where prices have come down, so these operations have been cut to the bone. But if economic growth starts to pick up and inflationary pressures begin to pick up, then you get something of a supply inelasticity meets rising demand environment. And that is what we're now getting in some of these commodity prices. But generally speaking, if we're getting that now, That isn't something that you get at the beginning of the cycle. It's something you get towards the end when you get synchronized expansion. That isn't the beginning of the cycle. It's the latter half or the latter quarter of the expansion overall. Therefore, you don't look at the resources sector as the sector to give you a temporal lead on the wider market. Generally speaking, they are going to rally in the latter stages of a bull market, and that they will be one of the last sectors to stop rallying. So we've already seen that shares like McDonald's or Procter and Gamble or Coca-Cola have rolled over, and they are now in this yield expansion phase. When we look at shares that really did spectacularly well on the way up. And if we look at Starbucks and from 2008 all the way through until really the latter stage of 2015, it was still advancing in a reasonably consistent manner. And this big drawdown in September of August of 2015 was really a great example of a previously consistent trend losing consistency at the penultimate high. But it's been trending lower for a year, and it broke to a new low this week. So that's another indication that this was one of the shares that did best and is now leading on the downside. So we may not be at the top in the market. We may still see the index moving to new highs. We might get an additional leg up on the major indices if we get fiscal spending and everything resulting from the election starts to fall into place. But we cannot simply ignore the fact that some of the shares that did spectacularly well on the way up. And we're really some of the greatest beneficiaries of the environment overall have now lost consistency. And Disney is another example of that. And and I wrote a fairly long piece yesterday about the healthcare sector. There are certainly problems for the healthcare sector overall. That when you get such an incredibly consistent advance, and then you move into this very volatile, large ranging phase. It is characteristic of ranging time and size, which is how we define a type 3 top. And that is something that we simply cannot ignore because healthcare was one of the very best performing sectors overall. So then, what are the things that are doing well now? Well, we def and I'm just going to pull up the I'm going to pull up the BlackRock World Mining Trust just as a way of showing off that performance because it trended lower for 5 years and now that downtrend is over. So it's a bit overbought in the short term, and there is the potential that we get some consolidation in the not too distant future, but by and large this is something that continues to go higher. We just looked at copper and copper prices just beginning to break out. So then, if we look at some of these copper shares, then we're also starting to see evidence that they are beginning to get some interest. And these are the kinds of things that we would certainly be looking at. But then we also mentioned that when you look at these types of shares that are getting this yield expansion, well, what about the shares that don't pay a dividend at all? So, Google has at least previously had one of the most consistent trends overall, that it has had these $100 ranges, one after another, and now it is pulling back to the region of the 200-day moving average. This is the first time that a breakout from a lengthy range has not been sustained. And maybe it's too early to make to draw that conclusion yet. But if it sustains a move below the 200-day moving average, then that would be a failed upside break. And it would be the first failed upside break since 2008. And again, that is also something that we cannot simply ignore. So we are most definitely in a more risky environment overall, that we would not expect to see a lead indicator from the resources sector. But there is the potential that we are seeing lead indicators from companies like Starbucks and Disney, the kinds of shares that did spectacularly well in a very low interest rate environment overall. So I think that this is something that is worth exploring further, and I think we will be writing about it over the coming weeks. It is because we are in a very taut environment. And when we look at the Nasdaq, and because it has been performing much more impressively than Wall Street overall, it is now right in the region of the trend mean. So if it is going to sustain this breakout, if this range is going to hold, then it's going to find support pretty soon. And if we do see another big drawdown, then that will hinder the consistency of the advance overall. We could be moving into a more generally more dangerous environment for the kinds of instruments that have been leading on the upside. I think that an easy prediction to make is that anything that is way overextended on the upside is at an increasingly high risk of pulling back and reverting back towards the mean in this kind of environment. And if we see clear upward dynamics next week, then that would give us an indication that short-term oversold conditions are going to be unwound, that it would be an entry opportunity for a significant number of assets overall, I suspect. Now, I don't like leaving the Friday audio without talking about technology overall. I think that there is just enormously impressive technological advances that are helping to keep oil prices under wraps, that are going to improve productivity gains overall. But there is the additional point that technology is disruptive. And one of the charts that I posted yesterday, and I'm just going to scroll down to get back to it. And sorry, that's today's copy. Excuse me. The chart that I posted yesterday of the cost of producing new drugs is startling, because the cost of producing new drugs is increasing in an exponential manner. That represents an incredible challenge for pharmaceutical companies, because they have to bet on blockbuster drugs. They don't get to bet on individual therapies. And that is one of the reasons that cancer is still such an enormous problem, because every cancer is different. You can't simply come up with one drug that will kill all cancers. And what we need is a change overall. And there is evidence that that is happening. Andrew Hessel, who is now at Autodesk, and his Pink Army are trying to crack that particular nut by creating real solutions for individuals and using the exponential decline in the cost of genetic sequencing to really address this issue. So I think that there is just enormous reason to be enthusiastic about the solutions that are coming through in terms of technology, that productivity growth is, I think, poised to really take off in the next few years. But we that is very much the cycle that we're in terms of technology, that technology is going to deliver us lower energy, greater productivity, longer lives, healthier lives, and more tools to enhance our individual productivity in our work. It's going to be enormously disruptive for legacy companies that are unable to keep pace. So, and that could potentially have a distorting effect on the stock market in the short term before. And obviously, what we've seen over decades is that the weightings in stocks change, that the S&P 500 today looks nothing like the S&P 500 in 2000, that there are huge companies that weren't even listed in 2000 now represent the largest companies on the index. And I suspect that that is not going to change, and that the pace with which interlopers displace companies that cannot rise to the challenge is probably going to increase overall. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for the weekend, and wish all the best to all of you.